This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we meet a few of the daring souls who recently set forth on the unforgiving course of the race to Alaska. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Despite the fact that fewer than half of the 40 entries in the first race to Alaska in 2015 made it to the Ketchikan finish line, with capsizings, boat damage, injuries, and just the sheer difficulty of the 750-mile course knocking the rest out, more than 60 teams signed up this year for the challenge to navigate the tricky waters of the Inland Passage without the aid of engines or any sort of external support. And although a large percentage of this year's contestants chose the multi-hulled sailing vessels that fared best in the original race, the number who chose much smaller craft, from kayaks and 12-foot sailing prams to state-of-the-art pedal sail hybrids, it was clear that for many it was not the $10,000 first prize nor the set of steak knives for whomever came in second that was the prime motivator in the rigorous undertaking. On the afternoon before the race, I went down to Point Hudson for the pre-race ruckus, probably the only opportunity anyone would have to see all of the boats and their mariners gathered together in one place. A lot of other people had the same idea. There was not a parking place to be found, and the sidewalks and docks were thick with well-wishers and vicarious thrill-seekers. Most of the boats were tied to slips in Point Hudson, but several were on trailers or set out on the lawn next to the Maritime Center. One of those still on his trailer was an almost ridiculously small single-hull sailboat with a tiny cuddy cabin. A handsome young man was leaning in a proprietary way on its gunwale. I decided to approach him. What's your name?
I'm Nate Rooks.
And what's the name
this
of your vessel?
This is Team Bunny Whaler. The boat is Bunny Whaler.
Bunny Whaler, and how long is she?
It's a Boston Whaler Harpoon 5.2, so 5.2 meters or exactly 17 feet.
And what's the longest journey you've taken her on prior to this?
We've had this boat probably on three-day voyages, so definitely not of this length, but it was enough to test it, to feel like it would be stout for the voyage.
So it's got an open cockpit. Are you able to like stick your heads up under there?
No, our doghouse up front, or our cuddy cabin, we pretty much pack all our bags up there. And it's a nice windbreak, but we sleep in the back. We don't really stick our heads under there.
Did you go last year?
Mm-mm.
Is this your first attempt?
This is our first year. I lived in California last year. My brother lived up here where we grew up on Bainbridge Island. And we'd wanted to do an inside passage trip for the last 15 years since my brother kayaked it. We decided this was the perfect thing to be a part of and quit my job in California and moved home and started rebuilding this boat.
So I see you've got a pair of oars here, and mm-hmm. of course it's a sailboat. So, is this a single person rows this?
A single person rows this. There isn't really enough space for two people. You could, but it's not really worth the effort because it's not going to go super fast rowing. It kind of just plugs along it.
So where do you sit when you're rowing?
This is a sliding seat. So the centerboard's underneath there. This is our sliding seat system. That was actually why it worked really well, was that there is a centerboard trunk there in the middle, and that's where all of the controls were. So we took all the cleats and everything off, took the main sheet off, put the rowing slide on, and rows pretty well. I was a rowing coach for 7 years, so the geometry to me was very important.
I see. So have you been doing a lot of training getting ready for this?
I have been. Yep, we do go to the gym pretty often. We go sailing as much as we can. And one of the biggest parts of our training has been going to yoga 2 or 3 times a week. We have an amazing teacher, and it's really helped us kind of even out what parts of our bodies hurt. And so we're pretty limber, more limber than we've ever been, and ready to rock.
So have you been studying and plotting your route and learning about what happened last year?
Mm-hmm. We have been watching what other teams did last year. We've been looking at the charts and the maps. For us, there is so much, because we're not going to know what every eddy does. It's more about if we're prepared to react in an appropriate way. It's going to be about making right the good choices all the way up.
Are you equipped with redundant radios?
We are. We have redundant radios. We have 2 iPhones on which we use to navigate, but then we have a backup Garmin GPS. We have a satellite phone, which is mostly a safety concern, but it's there. I think we can maybe give one update a day to our family. And
Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Nearby was a small trimaran, which I learned was also to be raced by two brothers.
My name is Kevin Bay.
Kevin Bay, and this is your vessel?
Sure is. This is the Emmendahl Windrider 17 trimaran. Sailing it in the R2AK race this year.
Solo?
No, my brother and I are racing this.
Okay, well, it's a small craft for two people. How long do you expect it to take?
We're shooting for 10 days, 10 days or less. Hoping that no catastrophes happen, we should make it in under 10 days.
And looking at the experience from last year, how much of the time do you expect to be sailing as opposed to the time you spent rowing?
Well, we're hoping to be sailing 100% of the time, aside from Vancouver Harbor. Realistically, we'll probably get quite a few hours rowing in this thing, but that's why we've been training so hard.
And tell me about your training. What do you do to train for this?
So Justin has been doing CrossFit training, actually, and strength training, core training. I personally have been using a rowing machine every day. And also I have a very physical job as a carpenter, and so that helps keep me in shape as well. But the rowing machine is where it's at.
So how much time you stay on the rowing machine?
I try and do about 20 minutes to a half hour a day.
So not hours?
Not hours. Not hours. And we've rowed the boat for hours, but it is definitely a little different rowing this thing than it is on a rowing machine.
And I guess you will be sleeping out in the open on these trampolines here, or do you have some way of covering it?
We have a Dodger that's not up right now, but it covers the front three quarters of that bay right there. And so with that up and the spray skirt up, you can tuck in and get out of the weather in the front helm while the man in the rear helm is steering the boat.
Over on the lawn, I found several men musing over one of the oddest craft I had ever seen, an open cockpit, pedal-powered race car sort of thing with slender pontoons and a loose-footed sail. This turned out to be the self-built entry of Team Take Me to the Volcano, the pseudonym for the boat builder and champion cyclist Matt Johnson.
Hi. Cool.
This is really quite an interesting contraption. I've never seen anything quite like that. Is this your own design?
No, it was designed by Rick Willoughby. He's an Australian pedal boat designer.
I see. You must be going solo in this. I mean, really not...
It's me, just me, yeah.
Just you. So how have you been training for this?
I've been training in this by every spare minute of my time in my garage building.
Building? So you...
I have done no training. Zero. Zilch. And so I barely have gotten it done in time. And yesterday I pedaled for 12 hours from Seattle into the wind and current. And that was basically my training.
And how did it go?
I got here. So
here you are.
I'm a bit sore, but I made it.
So have you sort of tried out your sleeping arrangements in here?
I slept in there one night, yeah.
And how does that work? I mean, where?
I basically just have to move everything out of the way. Sleeping in it is comfortable. It's great. It's just, you know, getting everything out of the way, getting the tent set up, which is easy if you're sitting on a lawn, but, you know.
So you've got a tent that will go over the cockpit.
Here. Yeah. Yesterday on the beach, it was just a challenge fighting the wind, getting the, you know, tent in place. And I'll be doing it on anchor, so that'll be providing additional challenge in the race.
Did you do this last year?
I did stage one on a friend's boat. Totally different boat. So this is a whole new challenge.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Not every entry seemed entirely serious. For example, there was this one. So, what's your name?
Rob Hodge.
And where are you from?
Seattle.
Describe this rig for me, will you?
It's a 12-foot pram yawl that sleeps two. And a lot of people say that there's no way those words should go together, and it is an odd bird. It has a blunt bow. It's perfectly square, 12 feet by 4 feet. And with a transom on the front and the back, it has a balanced lug mainsail and a leg of mutton mizzen. The boat carries about 90 square feet of sail, which is big for a 12-foot boat, but because it carries its beam all the way forward and aft, it's got a lot more stability than most boats.
So you got like a dagger board that goes down in here?
It has a dagger board that goes about 2.5 feet down through the bottom of the boat, and it sleeps two, just barely.
And are two of you going?
Just me and the monkey. My wife decided not to accompany me. She is taking the Victoria Clipper into a hotel room waiting for her in Victoria, and she isn't even stepping foot near Port Townsend. She just wants us to be over because she worries about me.
So that is the world's largest sock monkey.
He's about 4 feet tall. He wears an old pair of my son's Paul Frank pajamas and a life vest and a little sailor hat. And it started originally as a joke because this boat, me and my son were out in it last year, and we went turtle north of Bainbridge Island, just completely flipped over. And I've never seen a 9-year-old climb an upside down outboard motor so fast. He just went over and, you know. And so we ended up getting it back in the marina, which at that point I proved that the boat can't sink. Quite empirically, it was up to, you know, where there was parts of it about 6 inches above the water, and that was it. And so my son had a little bit of an aversion to being on the boat after that. So he said, Dad, the boat has to be safe before I go back out on it. So I took him in the backyard and I showed him the things I was working on for the race to Alaska and all, and getting the pump systems and everything worked. And he said, I asked him, so John, is it safe? He says, well, I think it has to be double safe. So I just grabbed a sock monkey and threw it in the boat and took pictures of the sock monkey looking over the boat and all, and, you know, give the thumbs up. And I came back home and showed the pictures to my son and says, well, I've had an independent monkey appraisal, and he has deemed the boat 3.5 safe.
Hodge said he only planned to do the first leg of the race to Victoria this time around. There were not only more entrants into this year's race, but also more diversity. Team Alula, sailing an F-27 trimaran like last year's winner, featured a 3-man crew, one from Seattle, one from Hawaii, and one from South Africa, and all in wheelchairs. There were entries from France, and from Boston, and from Reno. And although there is no doubt that testosterone was in statistical preponderance, there were 3 entries crewed entirely by women, including Team Sistership, whose 3 women crew, all of them over 50, were also sailing an F-27 trimaran and were profiled in the March 22 edition of Ms. Magazine. Team Kraken Up, which is the handle for the 8 women crewing the 26-foot long dory from Port Townsend's own community boat project, and Team Onism's Katie Stewart, Jenny Goff, and Emily Silgard, with whom I had a nice long interview, which was the unfortunate victim of an improperly pressed pause button on my recorder. But let it be known that these women have been in training and consider themselves serious contenders. As the crowds on the docks dwindled and the R2AK teams left their launches to seek a final dinner ashore, I decided to return home myself, thinking I would rise early to see the start of the race at dawn. And so it was that I returned to the Maritime Center at 4:30 in the morning on Thursday to see a mysterious dark figure moving in the dim shadows of the breezeway, pulling some kind of large trolley. It turned out to be local celebrity chef Aaron Stark. I asked him what he was up to.
Dude, I got a lust for life. And we are feeding people that have a lust for life. How about that? So, we did this oddball crazy thing last year. I don't know, we're trying to give it that, it's a serious race. And it looks like we're gonna have another epic start. Last year was just nuts. But it's January. You gotta be prepared for January. And I have my gurney here. And we're gonna make some really sweet, sassy oatmeal to hand out to some of the racers.
It was indeed cold with a sharp wind out of the south, and so it was happily that I found the Velocity coffee shop had opened early for the occasion. I fell into a long line and started chatting with the man in front of me.
Are you racing for Alaska? Team Golden Oldies, Ghost Rider. We're the 38-foot Super Shockwave catamaran. We won the first leg last year. We were 8 minutes late from the start because we couldn't put the halyard up, and we won by 8 minutes. So now we can pick up the halyard, so we're in 30 seconds, so we're 7.5 minutes faster than last year.
What's your name?
Steven Marco.
And who else is on the crew?
I've got my buddy Curtis Pitts from Reno, who our team is from Reno, and then I've got, who else do I got? Richard Mackey, John Thompson, and Ryan's going to kill me because I remember his last name. They're newbies to our team, and they're out of Olympia.
And how did you fare on the second leg?
We had 2 rules. Don't get hurt, don't break the boat. We pulverized the boat and Seymour Narrows, fractured the mast, tore the sail, broke a halyard, and so not so well.
No, so I guess you didn't make it.
I have a coat with one sleeve on it. People that only finish the first leg got their sleeve chopped off.
Back outside, I noticed three figures huddled at the top of the stairs on the veranda overlooking Admiralty Inlet, and I went up to find that it was Julie Knott, Kyle Porter, and Gary Pasco watching the sunrise, doing photography, and waiting for the main event.
I don't suppose any of you are kind of on the inside of this event.
I think I am.
Are you?
More than us.
I have a sailor staying at my house, and we have a boat on my street. Team Salish Express on Libra is the boat.
Where are the Tritium guys? Did they find a replacement boat?
They're right there.
A replacement boat?
Orange.
Yeah, I remember they were orange. Where are they? Or they're down there. No one I never saw them. You know their boat cracked up coming up from Long Beach?
No.
That 73-foot trimaran had like multiple failures. And they, I don't know what they did, but they took it back to Long Beach, came up, you know, and borrowed a boat and sitting out there, the crew.
So
they bailed. There was the biggest boat, you know, the fastest. Bills broke, you know, and then something else broke that was lifting the foils up and all kinds of stuff. I don't know. It was wild.
Wow.
Yeah. Last year I sponsored the first boat that capsized.
People were fighting for your sponsorship this year, huh?
No, he didn't even talk to me this year.
They said that James,
Team Gold Rush.
I'm letting her in on my team.
He just went around the corner and went,
I decided to go down and talk to the crew of the ill-starred boat.
So what's your name?
My name's Trip Bird.
How many of you are going?
Five on the real race. We're going to take a couple more for the first leg, but once we punch out from Victoria, it'll be five of us.
So tell me about this craft here.
Actually belongs to Jerry. He helped us out hugely. Our original boat was damaged on the delivery up, so he offered this to borrow. It's an F-32 SR, 32-foot carbon trimaran, lifting foils and canning rig. So
this is a last-minute substitute for the boat that you hoisted?
6 days ago.
What happened?
The original plan was to take a 73-foot trimaran, and on the delivery up, they broke the bowsprit off going through some serious waves, and it damaged a bunch of hardware on the bow. So, last minute for sure. There's one of us that is very familiar with the boat who's sailing. The rest of us are all pretty new to it, so we'll have plenty of miles to figure it out and learn how to sail. It's not drastically different from other boats that we've sailed, so we're hoping that some of the experience we have and other things will carry over.
As I talked to Bird, he and his teammates were pulling on bright red survival suits, coiling lines, and packing gear. I noticed that all around, the racers were making final preparations, so I rushed to get in a few more interviews while I still had a chance. I noticed a young man with a shock of wild, dark, wavy hair readying a small Hobie cat on the shore.
Are you going all the way to Alaska?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Dan.
Dan.
Isaacson.
Isaacson. So, just open tarpaulin and
that's it?
That's it? You got a tent that goes over here?
No shelter.
No shelter.
This is my shelter here.
A survival suit.
Yeah. And do you have a tarp, blue tarp that goes over the top? But that's just in case it rains, which it never does.
So, I mean, you must be carrying a paddle. I don't see one here, but...
Yeah, it's right here.
There it is. Oh, I see.
Stand-up paddleboard paddle. That's it.
And you're soloing this.
So, I got a buddy here. It's coming across the strait with me, and then in Victoria, he's gonna take off, and I'm gonna solo the rest of the way.
So, have you done this before? Did you do it last year?
No.
And where are you from?
From Bainbridge Island.
Have you done any long distance trips in a, what is this?
A Hobie 16. Yeah. So I've gone camping on it all over the state. You know, everywhere from Columbia River Gorge to Lake Crescent and everything in between. So, and it's been a good boat. This will be my longest expedition, for sure.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Nearby, I noticed a gray-bearded man readying a sea kayak for the voyage.
I'm Mike Higgins. My team is Mike's Kayak. If you look on the website, that's how I'll show up on the map.
Ah, I see. And who else is in your team?
Just me.
And how old are you?
63.
Wow, that's about my age.
Well, then you should be doing this.
And have you done long-distance kayak trips before?
Well, I did the R2AK last year.
Oh, you did?
And I went all the way to Ketchikan in a boat this size. This is a different boat this year. And I've also paddled. This is why they let me do the race, even though I was just in the kayak. I've also paddled the entire coastline of Washington, Oregon, California, and Baja Norte. And then I've been on vacations all over the world in a kayak.
I'm sorry, where are you from?
I'm from California.
Where in California?
North of San Francisco, where there's a beautiful rugged coastline that I learned to kayak on.
So I guess you're a master of the Eskimo roll and...
I would say my Eskimo roll is probably rusty, but it's really important to be able to get right side up without having to get out of your boat.
And also to self-rescue.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather roll up than have to self-rescue.
Right. And did you have to do either last year?
No. So I'm confident that I'll be able to keep the white side down.
So I see you have like a tiny little sail on the prow of your kayak.
Yeah, that's only good for going downwind. And and last year I didn't get to use it at all in the first day of the race. And actually in 22 days of paddling, I only got to use it like 2.5 days.
I would think that a sail, even a small one like that, would also tend to destabilize the boat.
Yeah, it's a worrisome. Last year on the race, my scariest day was with a really strong wind from behind, which I wanted to use the sail. I could have. It was going in the right direction, but the sail was jerking around. I was afraid it was going to pull me over.
So how are you equipped? I mean, how much... you can't carry a lot of gear in a boat like that.
Well, last year when I launched from here, because I was doing the whole race, I was completely self-sufficient for 2 weeks. I could have launched off this beach and gone off into the wilderness. I can carry tent, sleeping bag. Last year I had a desalinizer so I could make my own drinking water. And
not this year?
Well, because I'm only going doing the first day of the race, I can just...
Or you're not going to Alaska?
Not this time. I've already done the Inland Passage, so I'm doing the first day of the race, and then I'm going to go take the ferry up to Haida Gwaii and paddle around Haida Gwaii and take it easy instead of racing.
By 5:30 a.m., the exit to Point Hudson Marina was crowded with contestants trying to get out to Admiralty Inlet to begin jockeying for position at the starting line. I noticed a huge catamaran with four large men seated in rowing stations at the aft end, preparing to set out. As I approached, I recognized Stephen Marco, the leader of Team Golden Oldies, whom I had encountered earlier in the coffee shop, deep in discussion with his wife.
Hey, Dolly, you gotta get going. You can't go?
You're funny. We can't get off the dock.
Curtis says you can't, but you're the only one that says we can't. He says we can't get off.
Well, it's because he's not paying for it if we hit something. They asked, my crew asked me a plan. It's like, well, the plan is we're probably going to hit that guy there, and we're going to hit that guy over there. We have a lot of windage, and if the boat's not moving, the foils don't work, so we can't steer. So we have to wait for all these guys to get out of our way.
So you have to be the last one out the gate here.
Well, last one, we got to clear everybody on the windward side.
While they were waiting for clearing so they could pull out, I asked about the derivation of the team's name.
Golden Oldies, is that because you're all of a certain age?
Golden Oldies Multihull is a nonprofit organization in Europe that restores vintage multihulls, primarily from the O-Star days, which the single-handed transatlantic races. And we're representing them. The boat is 31 years old.
Really? And what is it?
Describe this is a 1985 Lock Crawler Super Shockwave, made by Mike Bell in Florida. It's the hull number one.
The first one?
It's the first one. Actually, she's famous. She's Nice Bear. That's her real name, Nice Bear. She's for sale, cheap. She's on eBay right now. Seriously.
We need to get the boat into the wind as soon as we can. So we kind of need, it's not a running start so much.
Okay, go.
At just a few minutes before six, Marco saw his opening, and as the four big men started straining on their oars, he and another crew member pulled hard on the dock lines to maximize headway before scrambling aboard at the last moment as the big boat nosed into the channel. Slowly, she turned up and finally, barely avoiding sideswiping the schooner Martha across the way, headed out the narrow harbor exit to join the other contestants. It was just a few minutes before six, so I rushed up to the shore to join the huge throng. It felt like thousands of people, standing shoulder to shoulder or sitting on rocks or logs all along the waterline, wait for the start. Suddenly, just before the stroke of six, a small helicopter flew in, flying precariously low right among the tight knot of circling boats, below the mast tops of the tallest trimarans, appearing to blow a couple of paddle boarders off course. It was so close and loud that I missed the sound of the starting gun. But suddenly, all of the boats were moving in the same direction. A trimaran with a bright blue spinnaker sliced past and quickly took the lead in the strong southerly wind. Several other of the high-tech multi-hulls close behind. I stood and watched for quite a while as the front runners quickly faded into the distance, leaving a long line of stragglers far behind. Finally, I walked back around the marina towards my car when I noticed a small gaff-rig pocket cruiser with all of its sails aloft, pinned by the wind against a large motor launch on the center dock, being pulled off by two men in a motorized inflatable. I recognized her as the Anne Martin, with whose solo pilot Phil Rossignol I had spoken briefly earlier in the morning. Once he was safely retied to the dock, I went to talk to him.
So what happened here?
So, first failure.
What happened?
Oh, I just can't catch the wind out. I don't know why.
And you're not, you don't have the capacity to paddle her out into
I do, but it's not strong enough for this kind of wind. So.
So are you giving up the effort?
No, I'll just go get my engine and go anyway, so.
Late in the day, I went onto the R2AK website, where there is a tracker feature that allows the viewer to follow the race in real time. Most of the craft had made it into Victoria by that time. Team Mad Dog Racing had won the day with their bright red catamaran named Sailing Anarchy. A few craft were still in the middle of the strait. One, an unmanned robot named Navocean, had not made it much beyond North Beach, and four were shown as still being in Port Townsend. One of which I noticed was Take Me to the Volcano, the home-built pedal-powered trimaran entry by professional cyclist Matt Johnson, with whom I had spoken. I phoned him off mic to ask what had happened. Things had been going well at the start, he said. He was making better than 10 knots, when about 7 miles out he had noticed that one of the struts to one of his pontoons was broken, forcing him to turn back. Family and other circumstances willing, he may try again, he said, if there is another race. That will be announced this September. On Friday, I read in the Peninsula Daily News that the Port Townsend police are considering reckless endangerment charges against the low-flying helicopter pilot, identified only as a 44-year-old man from Federal Way, who had been employed by an unidentified news team. As of this writing, on the evening of Sunday, June 26, Mad Dog Racing's Sailing Anarchy is once again well in the lead. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.